When you don't move the mountains, when you don't part the waters that I want to walk through. That's exactly what we're looking at today. And we're going back in the book of Daniel, because you remember some time back we quit at chapter 7, and we said we'd come back and try to finish some of it up. So I'm going to do something that's impossible. I'm going to go through two chapters this morning. How about that? Can y'all handle that? No. It's just an overview. It's all it is. It's just an overview, because we'll come back one of these days and go into detail, but there's a reason for it. And it says, Daniel reveals God's purpose in history for his people. As we're going to see, what God does is he tells Daniel through several visions about what is going to happen in the future. And what now, the advantage you and I have is, from our standpoint, we can look back. If you count up the years, what is it, 2016, add 600 to that, and you've got, what, 2,700 years. When Daniel was writing this, and it would unfold, we can look back now and see everything he said was going to happen has happened. So what does that do for us? It tells us when God says something's going to happen, that means it's going to happen. And if God says that he's going to take care of us, you know what that means? It's solidified now that we can count on him to do what he said, because everything he said that's going to happen has already happened up to the prophecy that he talks about. So that's what we're going to look at very, very quickly in Daniel chapter 8 and chapter 9. Now, I'm going to go back to verse 2 in just a moment, but it says in verse 15, and it came to pass, even when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning, then behold, there stood before me one with the appearance of a man. Remember, he saw one vision 3 years earlier, and now 3 years later, he says he sees this vision. It's probably about 551, whenever they're in captivity in Babylon. They've been there about 68 years, and they're getting close to the end of that 70-year time when they're supposed to be freed. And so Daniel is curious about what is going to happen next. So God gives him a vision, and he can't understand it. So God sends Gabriel, the angel Gabriel, to him, to help him understand it. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Ulai. And actually, this is a canal that was built later. It wasn't even in existence whenever Daniel was writing this. But now they found it, a 900-foot canal that connected two rivers. So again, all these remind us that, you know, God tells Daniel things that has not happened yet, but yet they come to pass, and we can look back and say, that's absolutely right. It's been verified through history. Who called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. You know, isn't that amazing? Here's the difference in a lot of people. Oh, yeah, they got a vision, and you put them on television, and everything's right. He said, I'm scared to death when God reveals something to me. You know, there's a real difference in how things happen when God really shows somebody something and what somebody dreams up themselves. He said, I fell on my face, but he said unto me, understand, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. Now, as he was speaking with me, I was in deep sleep with my face toward the ground, but he touched me and he set me upright. You know, when God starts dealing with you, sometimes you don't just stand up like you somebody, you get out on your face. And that's exactly what he's doing. So he has the vision, but he doesn't understand it. And he says here that God sends Gabriel, and we know Gabriel from other places in the scripture, right? Angelic being who helped in several instances. So his prophecy describes the period of time known as, and Jesus himself would refer to it in several times throughout the New Testament, as the times of the Gentiles. That's a phrase Jesus used. Peter used it some throughout the New Testament. It's the time of the Gentiles, or a time, a period of history in which the Gentile nations controlled Palestine. Even though they were in the land, they were controlled by someone else. They were oppressed. So that's exactly what Jesus referred to. There's the times of the Gentiles, and that's exactly what he's going to explain to him. That period of time began with the Babylonian captivity, and we saw that in our previous study whenever they left. Remember, Daniel was deported in about 605. Now remember, you're starting on 605, and we're going down to zero, and then we'll start with zero, and we come back up to when Christ was born, when Christ died in 33. So you're looking at a swoop. We're coming up here, and we're coming down, and we're going back up. So keep that in mind in some of these dates. With the Babylonian captivity, and extends to the return of Christ, when he again gives Israel the fullness of its original inheritance and rules the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And that is at the end of the tribulation time when there's a new heaven and new earth. So we're going all the way from this time, all those years, to a future time that hasn't happened yet. All right? He's given a prophecy of hope to Israel. Here's what he's saying. Cheer up, it's going to get worse. But God is still in control. That's it. It doesn't really matter how bad it gets, and that's what he's going to try to remind them. He said, even though you're about to leave Babylon and some of you are going to be free to go back to Jerusalem and Palestine, listen, you got 490 years coming that it's going to be tough. But I just want to remind you, God is still in control. You know what that does for us today if we pay any attention at all? If God can take care of them all those years, guess what that means? He can take care of me now. And whatever he says is going to come to pass, if all the things that he said has already come to pass, and we can verify that in history. There will be an era in Gentile or pagan domination over Israel, but that will end in the glorious return of Jesus Christ. And we're going to see that as it unfolds. Again, this is what did I say? An overview. So if you have a lot of questions, send them to me and I'll send them to somebody else. All right? This is an overview. Daniel's prophecy was given to remind God's people that no matter how bad it gets, I love that song that Laura was singing earlier that we played. When God doesn't do what I want him to do, and for somehow we kind of bought into that whole system in America, just name it and claim it. Oh, if you just say it, God has to do it. God doesn't have to do anything. You know, he doesn't. And that's what she says. You know, when you don't move the mountains that I want you to move, and when you don't part the waters that I want to go through, I will still trust you. That's what he's trying to drill in them. Oh, it's going to get bad. You think it's been bad. You know, it's going to get worse than this, but God is still in control. That God's kingdom will prevail. Now, let's look quickly what he does in chapter 8. He tells us about some forerunners of the Antichrist. Who is the Antichrist? Antichrist is in Revelation. It's in 11 and 12 of Daniel. It's the man of evil that will come in the last days when Israel is about to be annihilated. And so that's way in the future. That hasn't happened yet, okay? But these guys, what they do, he shows us through this prophecy, these two guys, these main people that we're going to look at, are people that show us the characteristics of the Antichrist. You know what that means? If you have a chance to escape being around when the Antichrist comes, you want to do it. That's what that means, all right? The rise and the fall of Alexander the Great and of one of Seleucid's rulers, Antiochus Epiphanes. That's exactly what he's talking about. These details show that times will get worse before they get better, and these two individuals mark the path. When you see these things happen, you'll know those chain of events are rolling, and they start right there, right after Daniel. Matter of fact, we've already seen some of them as Babylon was defeated by Persia. Now, let's go back to verse 3. He said, then I lifted up my eyes and I saw and behold, this is his vision that he sees, okay? And then Gabriel comes and explains it for him. This is what he sees. And behold, there stood before the river a ram which had two horns. You say, well, what's abnormal about that? Nothing. Not two horns. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other one. And the higher came up last. Here he's going to show us because one of the fourth century historians, Mark Sililius, if I can't pronounce it correctly, but what he determined and what he found in some studies and archaeological finds, that a ram was the symbol for the Persian army. And he said there would never be, you could see one of the leaders in the Persian army and all their armament, there was the face of a ram on it. And even in the zodiac, what is a ram dealing with? It's always associated with Persia. So whenever he says here, he's explaining to us Persia that is rising up is going to be a world power, and we know that. Cyrus comes and he defeats the Medes and takes over a great leader himself in probably, what, 551? So in this second ram is going to, the second horn is going to come up. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other one. And the higher one came up last. The vision further developed the transition between the Persian army, the empire, and the Grecian army that rose when Alexander the Great came on the scene. You know, if you go back and it's verified in history. You know, you can go back and look at how the Persian was the leaders, and Alexander almost out of nowhere comes up, and he's going to describe how he takes over. And as I was considering, behold, a he-goat, Alexander the Great. The he-goat is bigger than the ram, so he's more powerful. The he-goat came from the west. Look at where they are geographically. Go back and look where that, what was going on at that point in time. And he describes for us exactly where they're coming from. Out of the west, off the face of the whole earth, and touch not the ground. What does that mean? When Alexander came on the scene, he swooped the world. It's almost like he didn't touch. He just kind of skimmed it so fast and so quickly and overtook the world, and a young man died. You know, the guy was brilliant, by the way. You know, he was a student of what? Aristotle. Brilliant. And that's exactly what he's describing. And touch not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. See, because so Alexander the Great is a picture of the Antichrist who is going to come with ultimate power and a swiftness. And he's going to be the man. You know, when all that happens in that last days, and we'll get to that in the next two chapters, in 11 and 12, and then one day we'll do it in Revelation. And that is yet to happen. That's exactly what he's describing. The Antichrist is going to come, and, you know, he's reminding his people that, you know, things are going to be bad, and you need to be aware of that. Don't think, you remember what they did when, we'll look at it in just a moment, but whenever they went into captivity, you know, Jeremiah, the prophet, he preached to them, and he said, listen, if y'all don't get straight, judgment's coming from the north. And they laughed at him. And guess where judgment came from? The north. Babylon came, and they said, oh, we're going to pray for God to deliver us. He said, don't do that. Build your house, because some of you are going to die here. Because you have to stay here 70 years. And that came to pass. And during those last two or three years of that, probably 68 years they've been there, and he says, this is what's going to happen. The ram's vision was interrupted by the appearance of the male goat from the west. That reference almost certainly is to the divisive battles of Granicus, in which where Alexander overthrew the Persian army. You can go back and look at that in the dates, and you can see this is, nothing's been dreamed up. How in the world could Daniel know all these details several hundred years before even these first events happened? You know, some of the liberals try to say, oh, well, it's dated wrong. Yeah, right. That's not it at all. When you start looking at some of the language, actually, you know what happens here? Up until chapter 7, from chapter 2 all the way through chapter 7, Daniel's writing in Aramaic. And now in chapter 8, he starts writing in Hebrew. Why is that? Because everything he's going to say now, before he's been talking about what's going to happen with the Gentile nations, you know, he described Babylon and the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans, and he's speaking to a Gentile world, but now he's speaking to God's people. So now he moves from Aramaic, and he moves to Hebrew with a lot of significance. Why? He said, because the things I'm going to tell you pertain to what God's going to do with his own people. You know, if we're his people by faith, it's the same thing. We can trust him even with things that haven't happened yet in our life. And that's the point he's trying to make. It is almost certainly, and you go back and you look at it, and I couldn't put all those in there for the sake of time. Now look at verse 8. Therefore the goat waxed very great, and he was strong. Then the great horn was broken, and in its place came four notable ones toward the four winds of the heaven. What happened at the end of Alexander's rule? You know, he didn't last long, and he died. What happened after him? Remember? 22 years later, who took his place? Four generals, remember? They divided it up. Ptolemy, Seleucus, Cassander, and what's the L one? Something on us. Yes. There you go. You remember your history? All right. Very good. No more remarkable or accurate prediction could ever be imagined than this. How in the world would he know all that? God told him that. He divided it up, where they were coming from, how many was going to take it place. Man, there's a lot of stuff that went on in that change up, absolutely, if you go back and look at it. The breaking of the notable horn was a reference to the untimely and unexpected death of Alexander in 323 at the apex of his strength. He said, this is what's going to happen. You're going to see all these things happen. But God is still in control. It was divided among these generals, and we just named them, didn't we? We're ahead of ourselves, aren't we? Does that mean we'll get out on time? No, that doesn't mean that. The succession of developments continued with the rise of the little horn. Remember, it said there was a little horn, and it would come up, and especially in the east and in the south. Now, what happens? You remember, out of these, all the subterfuge that went on between Ptolemy and the Seleucids. Well, finally, 195, Antiochus's father kind of took over Palestine rule, and through a lot of underhandedness, I'm not saying it right. How do you say it again? I need to see it again. Epiphanes, you know, I'm going to show his name again. He should not have been in the place, but they lied and cheated and murdered and put him in place. All right. So now he's that little horn that's going to come up on the scene. Antiochus Epiphanes. He's the eighth in a long line of Seleucids and should not have been there. But like I said, through subterfuge and just murder and treachery, he ended up there. And he ruled from 175 to 163. Now, here's the second picture. Alexander shows us the powerful and the swiftness of the Antichrist when he comes. And this guy shows the wickedness of it, if you can imagine. It'll just be multiplied 10,000 times with the Antichrist. Anybody remember what he did? I mean, he was crazy. He goes in there because he says, you know what? We're going to take away the culture of the Jews and we're going to make the Greeks rule here. So what he does, he goes in and takes the high priest off the rule from the Jews and puts Jason, who is a Greek, in there. So what they're doing is they start changing the system, kind of like our government does. They just do it a little bit by a little bit. So they put a new high priest in there who is a Greek, and they start changing the rules, and they start doing all these horrible things. You can read about it in 1st and 2nd Maccabees. You Catholics would appreciate that, I'm sure. Remember those two books that there, we call them the Apocrypha in the intertestamental period, that's not in our Protestant Bible, but there are history stuff, even though we wouldn't say they're canon with Scripture. And it described exactly who he was and what he did. I mean, you know, when it got to the extreme, you remember what he did? He went in there and killed a pig on the altar of God's place. Now, what was that like to the Jews? You couldn't have done anything any worse. I mean, he did, in 2 Maccabees 4, it just said that there were some of the Jews that would kill themselves rather than defile themselves with the stuff that he was making happen. You know, just kind of forcing it on you. Kind of like our government. You know, somebody's in a government place, they just force things on you like whether you want them or not. And that's what he was doing. But it got so bad, remember what happened? When Judas Maccabees came on the scene, he said, enough of this. So he led a revolt. And actually in 66, where they came in and they took it back over and kept it for a while until the Romans then came back on the scene. I mean, we're talking about a wicked guy. Now, did all this happen? Oh, did he say it was going to happen? He said it was going to happen. And that's exactly what happened. Go back and read it in history. And if you multiply, you know, it actually even said that in verse 23 of chapter 8. I didn't put it up here, but it... one of the angelic beings or one of them posted the question, said, how long is God going to let these atrocities go on? And he put a day on it. You remember? Go back and look at it. It says 2,300 days before this man's going to be stopped. And that's exactly what happens in history. 171 B.C., whenever some of this thing started, and whenever Judas Maccabees and the Zealots and the Maccabean Revolt, you go back and look at the time to when Jason was put on the place, and you got 2,300 days. Now, how would Daniel know that? He wouldn't know that unless God told him. So what does that mean? Whatever God says is going to happen, it's going to happen. Whether you agree with it or whether I agree with it or whether we disagree with it, that's exactly what happened. Now, let's move to the second part. Are y'all with me still? Am I talking too slow? Daniel's understanding of Jeremiah's prophecy for God's people. In chapter 9, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, came to understand by the books of the number of years according to the word of the Lord as it is Jeremiah the prophet. Jeremiah told him, you're going to be there 70 years. He knows we're coming to the end of 70 years, so he says, what's going to happen? So that's why he's inquiring, and God sends him that prophecy, that he would spend 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. Now, his discovery of the purpose of God was for Jewish people was through God's already word that was given through the Jeremiah the prophet. That's what I alluded to just a moment ago. Look at this. It says in Jeremiah, and this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. At the time Jeremiah was saying this, they were laughing at him. Remember, they threw him down in the well. They tried to kill him, and they couldn't kill him. They said, oh, we don't want to hear your word. We want every day to Friday. So they tried to kill him. They put him down in the well. Well, when the exile came, they took him into captivity with them. So he said, listen, guys, go ahead and build your house and get to come, because most of you are going to die here. Why? Because we're going to absolutely stay here 70 years. Daniel's looking back. Within 2 years, this fulfillment is going to be done. He says, what's next? We need to know what's next. And it shall come to pass when 70 years are accomplished that I will punish the king of Babylon and the nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity, and the land of the Chaldeans will make it perpetual desolations. He said, you'll be free to go back to your land, but then the hard times are going to start. Remember what I said? Cheer up, it's going to get worse. You say, well, those 70 years were done, it's all over. No, it's not. For thus saith the Lord, after the 70 years are accomplished in Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you, causing you to return to this place. And we know that's a historical fact. They did. They did not get to set up total control of the place. They're still oppressed, but they're free to go back. Okay? The basis of their 70 years, you say, well, why did God do that? It's real, real simple. Remember what he told them? He said, every 7 years, don't plant anything on your land. Let it lie out there and rest. And guess what? They're just like everybody else. They're greedy. They said, oh, no, no, no. Man, if we can get this out of 6 years, man, we can get another one out of seven. So they did that for their 800 years in existence there. 490 of them had been abused. And when you look at, remember the year of Jubilee? Every 7 years was the 49, 7 times 7, every 49th or every 50th year, which was the Jubilee, was a week of sevens, 7 years, 49. Remember what would happen at the year of Jubilee? The land that had been confiscated would go back to somebody in the family, and the slaves would be freed. It was a year of Jubilee. So they knew that concept very, very well. So when he comes up in a moment, he says 70 times 7, we're talking about 490 years. And you know what God says? I'm going to get those back. You know, we think that we can break God's guidelines and that just because he don't just hit us with lightning right in this moment that we get away with it. He says, you don't. And they're not. And we're not either. 7 years of seven equals 490. We'll talk about this a little bit more in those last two chapters. But again, this is an overview. He said to be 490 years cut out of history in which he would end sin and bring in everlasting righteousness and holiness. 490 years, that's a long time. You say, well, now, when does all that happen? They will be trodden down out of the land for 490 years. Even though some of them might be back in the land, they will not be in control. That's very important that you understand that. You say, well, yeah, they're back in the land, but they're not in control. They were under the Romans. They were under the Turks. They were under all kinds of people. They were oppressed. But finally, God, when they trust God and bow down to serve him, that's at the very, very end of all this at the tribulation time when Zechariah said, you know, they're going to look up whom they have pierced and then they're going to bow down when this thing is all over. But that's a long way in the future yet. That hadn't happened. So we're witnessing today a miracle of human history that the Jewish people have survived the melting pot. Okay, let's back up real quick. You said there's 490. We're going to see it in just a moment. They're going to start, it says, when the rebuilding of the temple starts in Nehemiah chapter 1 and 2, it's talked about. Artaxerxes, the Persian king, Artaxerxes the first, gave them that freedom in 444. And when you start calculating that, it says until the time of the Messiah is cut off when Jesus is killed in 33. You do the math there. And you might have to figure in what Sir Walter Scott was talking about. I'm not sure that, you know, some of their years was based on 360 days, not 365. So be careful if you're doing the math in there. But that's what you come up with, 490 years. All this time, and then we're going to get to where we are now in just a moment. We're going to see that that time ended with Jesus. So now we're in between a gap before that 70th week. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me go ahead. They've survived the human jungle existing even today as an entity of themselves, regathered and reborn in their own land. Look what Arnold Toynbee said about the Jews. He says, as for long life, the Jews live on. The same peculiar people today, long ages after the Phoenicians and the Philistines have lost their identity. They all just kind of got acclimated. This one married this one and this one married this one. Now you really can't tell them apart. Basically is what he's saying. The ancient Syriac neighbors have gone into the melting pot and been reminted because they all intermarried. And now, like I said, they're something different. They're not what they really started to be. He said, while Israel has proven impervious to this joining together, to which all Gentiles in turn succumb. Think about that. What has happened to them? Okay, they were in captivity right then. They were freed. What happened since then? Who came over? You got the Grecians were oppressing them. Then the Romans came on the scene. And then you have Antiochus and his group. Remember when I didn't put it in there, but you can see the same thing there in 1st and 2nd Maccabees where it's talking about some of the atrocities that Antiochus did was like one day he killed 80,000 people. And whenever the Romans come in to suppress this, when Titus came in and you know, Jerusalem was sacked in 70, when it said that Josephus, the historian, actually was recording it, he said they would crucify 500 people a day on crosses. He said the land around there, the trees, were gone because they'd cut all the trees down. You say, well, how in the world would they survive? Because God said they would. You know, look at that. You think about that. How, when all those things are happening, remember the group holding out there at Masada? Y'all saw the movie, right? Anybody else? I know Laura's been there. Any of y'all stood on Masada? You know, you look outside, right outside the Dead Sea, a Herodian garrison that was built there. The Zealots took it over whenever Rome was coming in 70, and 900, some of them was holding out there, and they finally committed suicide because, you know, Rome had built this long, what you call it, track. They pushed their things up the hill. You can still see it. You can go on topographical map now, and you can see the remains of the track that they built so they could push up to the side of the mountain. How in the world did they survive? What happened after that? Just start naming them. My goodness. Not them. You got the Crusades. You got the Dreyfus Affair. You got Hitler. How in the world can they go through all that stuff? And in the middle of some of that stuff, in 1914, thousands of them started going back to Palestine. In 1948, what happened? Became a state again. How in the world can someone survive all those years and come back to that place? I know they're fighting over there, and the Arabs say it's their land, and the Jews say it's their land. I think the Bible says it's the Jewish land. That's what I agree with. I mean, I believe that. And that's exactly why, if we live to see it come happen, that nobody is going to terminate Israel. They're going to almost terminate them. But Jesus is going to come back, and that is the only reason they won't be terminated. But he said, nobody else on earth is like these people. And that's exactly true. In history now, we can look back and see what everything Daniel's been talking about hundreds of years before it happened has happened. What does that mean? When God says something, we can count on it. If God says, I'll never leave you or forsake you, you know what that means? Then he's never going to leave me or forsake me. That's exactly what that means. It's a verifier for us that we can trust God. Now, quickly, the 70 weeks in verse 24. Daniel says, 70 weeks are determined concerning thy people and concerning thy holy city to finish the transgression and to make the end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity. Remember what the weeks? A week is 7 years. Okay? Don't get confused on that. And you go back through the history and you can see from the year of Jubilee to right on, that's exactly, they would understand that. That's what that means. And to bring everlasting righteousness and to seal up the vision and the prophecy and anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem, 444, whenever Artaxerxes I gave them the freedom to go back out of, he's a Persian ruler then who has taken over Babylon. He says, you can go back now through Nehemiah and through Ezra where you see those things happen. They'll go back to build Jerusalem until the Messiah, Jesus the Prince. Until he's cut off, till he's killed. And it shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks, and you add those things up, and that's what you come up with, all right? And the wall, even to the troublesome times. You know, God says, you abused the Sabbath for all those years. He says, we're going to have to get those back. What does that mean? It means you cannot sin, and it will not go uncounted for. That's what that means. It doesn't matter if you're a Jewish person or you're a Gentile. When we sin against God, it has to be accounted for. Either you pay for it yourself or Jesus pays for it for you when you place your trust in him. That's how that works. A block of history yet to come in the fulfilling of God's promise with the nation of Israel. What are you saying? You're saying, you just watch that little piece of land over there. That's the center of the world. And I hope, I'm not sure exactly. I don't believe the church is going to go through the tribulation. That's that last week. You remember what I said? 490 years is up to the time when Christ died. So now we're in a gap because that last 7 years hasn't started yet, according to how Revelation describes it and how Daniel will describe some more of it. So we're in that gap now. Christ has been killed, and now there's a gap between whenever that seventh year span starts. So what's happened is we're going to start seeing some things, and I think we're going to see some things right up to the time whenever it really gets bad. So if you're paying attention and you're looking over there, you're going to see these things. And Daniel is explaining to us, this is what's going to happen. And when you see this start to happen, Jesus himself said that, right? He said, when you see that desolation, when you see these things start to take place, and he describes that in Matthew quite extensively, for the Jewish people, he said, man, you better run for your life. Why? Because this isn't to be bad. The time is planned by, and that's it. This is not something somebody else worked up. God said, I'm going to do this. You say, what, he punishes his own people? Yeah, that's what happens. When we sin, there's always a consequence. We think we can sin and get away with it, but you can't. It's going to catch you sometime or another. Everybody has to give account for that. And God's people did the same thing. He has planned the period involved until sin is finally dealt with and eternal righteousness, which we would see as the final kingdom come to pass. Look at this one. It describes what happens after the 69th week and before the 7th week, and that's where we are right at this moment. We're living in that gap. After making a covenant, here's where we are quickly. This 70th week, here's what's going to happen. In that seven-year span, according to Revelation and according to Zechariah and according to several other prophecies, when you start putting them all together, what's going to happen is, right now, everybody over there in the Middle East hates Israel. You all agree with that? They want to drive her into the Mediterranean. You know, that is their intention. And everybody over there, why do you think they're flying Russian planes over there on the other side? Russia's not done. That part of the world's not done with this thing, I guarantee you. They're lulling right now, but it's not over with. So everybody's going to come back. You know, Jesus talks about it there in that Valley of Megiddo. When if Jesus didn't come back, it says the whole world would be annihilated. Everybody, even the Jews. Why? Because of such a battle. Remember what it says? It says it's such a fierce battle that the blood will be how high? Anybody remember? Up to the horse's bridle. There'd be so much destruction from that war that's going on over the last, that there would be blood all the way up. You say, well, that's impossible. No, it's not. Put half the people of the world over there and see what you have. That's exactly what you have. And Jesus is going to come back. And Zechariah said that. He said, then they're going to look at me. He said, and they're going to look on the one whom they're pierced. And he said, and then salvation is going to come to some of them. Only a fraction, though. What does it say? Only a fraction. Only a fraction of them are going to believe. The rest of them are going to be killed. Why? Because they choose their own way instead of God's way. So you and I, as we watch over there in the Middle East, if we happen to be here long enough for them to start saying the Jews are about to build another temple, you better get your bags packed. Because something's fitting to happen. Why? Because the Antichrist is going to come on the scene when all this turmoil is going on, and he says, I'll take care of you, Israel, and that's going to be the only person that's for them. We used to be. Now we're not even that anymore. So that's going to show you where our destruction is going. Why? Because our loyalty is gone. And he's going to say, I'll take care of you. And he's going to say, oh yeah, I'm a nice guy. So he sets up a temple for them and they start offering the sacrifices again. And 3.5 years into it, Revelation says, he's going to take his mask off and going to show really who he is. And the hell is fixing to hit. And then for that next 3.5 years, that's what it is. It's really hell on earth. And unless Jesus intervened, it would be over for everybody. So, you know, you keep your eye on the Middle East. Why? Because that's where everything is. That's where the center is. But you know what? Do you think I'm going to sit around and worry about that every day? Why? No. Because God said, if I'll trust him, he'll take care of me. As bad as it might get, and I'm not even Jewish. You know, you say, well, in those days, you want to be glad you're not Jewish. Well, no, that really doesn't matter. If you trust in Jesus, it doesn't matter if you're Jewish or you're Gentile. The thing is this, we can trust now, looking back in history, that God says, what I say is going to happen, whether you believe it or not, and whether I believe it or not. But you know what that also does? It reinforces that we can trust God to do what he says. And he says, if we would trust him, he would forgive us and take care of us. Let's pray. Lord, it's beyond our comprehension. So many of these things that are spoken that we just don't understand, but it reminds us that we can trust you. And Lord, we thank you that our future is in your hands. And regardless of how bleak it is now or how bleak it might become in the place in which we live, you're still in control. Thank you for revealing that to us through your prophet Daniel and through the things that have happened in our past history that we can look back on. We just ask you to continue to be merciful and patient with us as we commit our lives to you and our trust to you. In Jesus' name, amen.